Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the Entrepreneur Experiment with me, Gary Fox. We're doing another Ideas Lab. It's Monday. That means it's the Ideas Lab. We have a whole lot to get through today, so we'll fly straight into it. Coming up in season 3 of the Entrepreneur Experiment, we have some cracking interviews. We're really progressing and making some great progress. This week, we have Seamus Fahey, founder of Voltaire Diamonds, Merian Vaults, and Merian Gold. That's a pretty cool lineup of companies. How many people do you know with their own vault? It's a really good chat. I've already recorded it. It's coming out this Thursday. Huge amount of insights to be taken from this one. We also have Brody Sweeney, founder of O'Brien Sandwich Bars, and Camille Tai, one of the most recognizable names in entrepreneur space in Ireland. We've also got Rory O'Connor, the Wexford founder of Scurry. They're a logistics company making huge inroads at the minute with the rise in e-commerce. And we also have Jo Davey, who I'm really happy to get on, as she's the founder of Joe's Absolute Nutrition. If that doesn't ring any bells, you will recognize the protein balls when you see them. Go Google Joe's Absolute Nutrition. They're absolutely everywhere and they're absolutely delicious. Don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter. It is all the links of the stories that I'm going to talk about today. I add in lots of extra links as well, so further reading, stuff we didn't get to talk about. Let's kick off. Story one, the Billy Shark, Gymshark. We've talked about them a couple of times on the pod already. They are now worth £1 billion. We talked about them about a month back due to their clever accountancy strategy of keeping so much cash on the books. You can go back and listen to, I will pull it up right now and tell you which experiment it is. It is episode 58. So go back and look at that. I'm incorrect. It's episode 57. Go back and look at episode 57 of the Ideas Lab. It explains how they keep so much cash on hand. It's a really interesting story. I'll give you a quick recap. Their gym sportswear brand started in 2012. Ben Francis started it in his parents' garage. He also has a really good YouTube channel, which I'd recommend go checking out, as he does a huge amount of behind-the-scenes stuff. So he started Gymshark when he was working at Pizza Hut. He bought his own machine, started in his parents' garage. His personal stake in the company is now worth $700 million. He only started in 2012. Just think about that, 8 years. They have no stores. They do zero traditional advertising. And they built the business entirely through sponsoring online influencers and famous names and focused entirely 100% on the DTC market, which is direct to consumer. Everything goes through their website. It's an unbelievable model. If you want to go and understand what the e-commerce space looks like in 2020 and will look like in 2030, probably go look at Gymshark. They are at the bleeding edge of e-commerce in the world, not just Ireland. The banking revolution. See what I did there? Revolution. It's a good headline. If you're subscribed to the newsletter, you'll see it. This week, they announced their losses tripled in 2019. So they were at, let me pull up the figures right now as we're chatting. They reported pre-tax losses of £107 million sterling compared to £33 million the previous year. So that is a mighty loss. That's despite the revenue jumping 180% to 163 million and their customers increased to 10 million from 3.5. So in a traditional business, you would imagine they should be making money, but they're what are called a challenger bank. So they're mainly tech focused in the banking space. Everything's run through an app, but they've no high street stores as yet. They also claim to have 1 million customers in the Republic of Ireland. I'm a customer. I like them, I've been a customer for quite a while, but a lot of questions remain about them. What is the actual status of the money that you hold there? Are they actually a bank? Are they covered by the deposit scheme? Apparently not. Now, I'm an off financial wizard, so I'm making a call for the financial whiz people that listen to this pod. Get in touch. We'll talk about this again next week. Get in touch. Let me know what your thoughts are on Revolut. Send me a 60-second voice note and I'll pick a couple of play out next week. I use them for my day-to-day. I don't use them for my business. Thomas Arnold, a regular fan of the pod and contributor to the pod, sent in the question about should you use Revolut for your business or not. I don't at the minute. I use AIB for various reasons, but they're targeting heavily entrepreneurs and startups in their for business offering. I haven't done enough research into it to know should you move there yet. This is more like a call to action for people to get involved, get the listeners involved and tell me what you think about Revolut. Would you use them as a business or would you just use them on your day-to-day spending? I just use them for day-to-day. I transfer a fixed amount of money and I essentially use it as a budgeting tool. So I say, okay, I'm going to spend whatever it is, X figure this month on discretionary spending. So, you know, shopping, coffees, you know, stuff that's non-essential, not your mortgage, not your bills. And I use that to keep track of my spending because it shows me exactly day to day, month to month, week to week, what I'm spending and breaks it down. So I find it really good for that. I haven't used the business thing. Also, their other competitor in the UK, Monzo, has announced similar losses. They announced losses of 113.8 million. Again, their challenger bank, not a traditional bank. Is that something they can expect, and will they catch up with traditional banks in terms of can they compete as a backlash and the potential losses of COVID-19 hit? We don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Do get in touch. Let me know your thoughts on Revolut. And finally today, buy your tickets today for Electric Picnic 2022. That's the headline I've written for the newsletter in the morning. And why I've written that is in today's Sunday Times, they had a small article on the front page, but it was actually really, really important when you read it. It's about the events industry and the future. It says, will there be no events in 2021? So we're in the middle of 2020 now. Okay, there's not that much left of the year, but will there be no events at all in 2021? And why they write that is, it's a really good article, check it out if you still have Sunday Times, is that event organizers are no longer able to get pandemic insurance. So they cannot take the risk of putting on an event and then having to cancel. So let's say you're organizing SA Electric Picnic in 2021. You'd have to prepay acts, you have to book everything, you'd have to rent all the kind of stuff up front. So how do you take that risk? Normally, if something terrible happened, it would be covered by insurance and you would have to pre-book everything. But costs are astronomical in events. There's a huge amount of upfront costs. A lot of events actually lose money. And this is huge news for not only the events industry, but also the tourism and hospitality sector as well, which I work in myself, so I know how badly it's been hit. If there's no events in 2021, and I actually don't think there will be, if I'm being honest, if I'm nailing my colours to the mast here and getting off the fence. I spoke with a friend of mine this week who's very good friends with someone who works in a virology department. And his thoughts are this will be 2 years. The COVID will be in effect. And elements of COVID will be in effect for 2 whole years. Now, that's just opinion. Don't take that as gospel. But imagine a world where you have no events for 2 years. And the knock-on effects of what that will be. So knock-on effects are huge. So events don't just drive income for organizers. There's all the suppliers, vendors, artists, and local hospitality, such as accommodation, you know, cafes, bars, restaurants, all that kind of stuff that, you know, spring up and around an event that are already in an event space that already rely on maybe events coming once a year that provide an influx of people that keep them going for maybe 2 or 3 months in the winter when things are a little bit quieter. A friend of mine works in the event space and I was just texting him about it and he was just saying, look, adapt or die. You have to look at every single option and imagine, reimagine the whole event space. And this is where the ideas for today's Ideas Lab come from. There's chances for entrepreneurs here to enter the event space and reimagine it from the ground up. So what will events look like with no people? That sounds silly when I say it out loud, but that's the reality of what events in 2020 now look at. I just literally finished watching UFC 252 this morning and Miocic Cormier 3 is one of the biggest fight events of the year and it was held in an empty room with zero fans. And that's one of the biggest sporting organizations in the world. Dana White is a seriously shrewd operator. He knows what he's doing. He was one of the first sports in the world, if not the first, to put back on a mainline event. Look at the Champions League, look at the Europa League. Now been held in empty stadiums in Lisbon and in Germany, but they're still getting it held. So if you're in the event space or you want to be in the event space, look at this as a blank canvas. Look at this and go, okay, people still need events. You still need entertainment in your life. You know, life has to continue. You know, sporting events will continue. Real world also has to continue. People do need to be entertained. People need things to even go to virtually. So how do you look at that? So this is this week's experiment for all of us. I want you to send me your ideas and how you're reimagining running events in 2021 with, let's say, no fans / attendees. What does that look like? Get in touch with me. Let me know what that looks like. Finally, the best article I read this week was, do you suffer from a lack of prioritization? It's a bit of an out there article. It's written by this online. It's not written by a person. Well, it is written by a person, but it's written by someone who doesn't actually publish their name. It's called Wall Street Playboys. It's a finance blog, but written kind of with a very extreme edge. It's quite good. And the blog is about, do you suffer from a lack of prioritization? And it lists the reasons why people make excuses and don't achieve their goals. He talks about the fitness goals. So I'm not in shape because I have a long commute. I'm not in shape because I don't have time. I'm not in shape because I'm forced to eat bad food due to client meetings and been on the go all the time. And the same is true of your business. I don't have time. My commute's too long. I don't have the money to start it. So what is 2020 going to be a reminder of for you? There's only 19 weeks and 6 days left in 2020. So that's 20 weeks to get something done. So do you want this to be your year of COVID? Do you look back in 2020 and you're like, oh, that was the year of COVID? Or do you want to look back and go, 2020 was the year that I started my business, or I started my, you know, my course, or I started my future, I started my road on the journey to achieving what I want to do in my life? You can decide that. You've 20 weeks left in 2020. I'll see you on Thursday for an equally inspirational chat with Mr. Seamus Fahey. Until then, be safe and start your entrepreneur journey today.